Where's the product at today? Like, describe the product, and like when you kind of like pitch it and describe it to people, where's it at today, and how can people interact with the product?
Totally. Yeah. So we are a live product. We've been in beta with actual users since the end of Q1 of last year. We really went wide with the release summer of last year, and we went from like dozens of users creating hundreds of clips to tens of thousands of users making hundreds of thousands of clips. And it's really amazing, and that's been in the span of a year. So right now there's a live desktop app. You go to AllStarGG, sign up, download the app. It is integrated with Counter-Strike, Dota 2. You can create content from within the game very easily. The whole idea of All-Star is we take the creation process and we make it really accessible.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. This is a fun day because I get to sit down with Nick Cuomo, founder and CEO of All-Star, which you'll hear all about. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Seth. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Many of our listeners know this, but I like bringing out of the box or different industries into this podcast. I like it because I get to learn about new stuff and I enjoy doing that. But I also think that it's important that we're understanding newer industries or understanding maybe non-traditional industries. And so that's what we're doing today by diving into the gaming world. Nick, I'd love to hear a little bit about your story, but you started out, you were a pro gamer really before it was a cool thing, before every young kid wanted to be a pro gamer.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Take us back to that.
Yeah, that was going way back. This was like kind of a high school and college thing for me. So dating myself a bit, but it's like over 15 years ago. I guess how it all started was, like anything else, innocently enough, I played a lot of games growing up. I always loved games. I think the first game I played was literally Pong on my brother's Atari. I didn't really get into gaming too much until, a little later on, I had my first like gaming console, Sega Genesis. And I always something about video games really appealed to me, and I didn't get competitive with them until I started to get into like PC gaming. So I started to play the original version of Counter-Strike way back before it was a retail game, way before Valve even owned it. It was just a mod of Half-Life, and I was pretty good at that game. They started to throw tournaments for it, just kind of grassroots at internet cafes in and around the tri-state area. I grew up out on Long Island. And me and a couple buddies just got together and took our gaming team to Manhattan. We were, I think, probably 16 or something, 15 or 16 at the time. We just took the train. We took the LIRR from Long Island out to New York City, and we went to this tournament at Web2 Zone, which was kind of the nexus of competitive gaming at the time. And, we got our asses kicked. We lost pretty terribly, but it was fun. It was like addicted. Like right away, it was just exhilarating and exciting, and I couldn't wait to go back. And that was kind of the beginning of it for me. And how that kind of, went from just a passion to like, a profession. I made content. I had, gone to probably dozens of tournaments at that point. Nobody really knew about me. Nobody really cared about me. And so I took all my best moments and I made content. I made video content. And like overnight, that the content went viral. This was like pre-YouTube, pre-Twitch. And I had fans, I had haters, teams were trying to recruit me. It was a pretty life-changing moment, and it really taught me the value of gaming content as a form of social currency.
How are you getting that out? Pre-YouTube, pre-Twitch, how were you where was this content going? Yeah, where was it at that time?
Yeah, well, so before Discord, gamers hung out and chatted on something called IRC. I believe it was Internet Relay Chat, as the acronym would indicate. And it was like kind of a, you know, it was very inaccessible, sort of like, it looked like a coding window. It was like black and white, and you had like, you know, very kind of a, you know, terminal looking text. And there were certain servers you could go to for, you know, if you want to chat about anything, you want to chat about knitting or, you know, movies. So there was these big servers for gaming, really competitive gaming. I believe Gamesurge.net was the big one for North America. It's like tens of thousands of gamers there. And that was really where pro gaming, at least in Counter-Strike, really lived. So, you know, there was, it's very similar to Slack, built on like similar technologies. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, you know, you had to sort of know your way around technology to even get there. So we just distributed through IRC. I went and had all my friends go to all the most popular channels and post links and get banned and repost the links and, you know, go around and tell your friends, and very grassroots, very gritty and sort of, you know, as hard as possible. And then even just like serving up the content, there was no websites you could upload videos to at the time. So I had to find people with FTP servers and convince them, because I was a kid and I had no money. So I had to convince them that the content was interesting enough that, you know, they should help me out, and I would somehow be able to pay back the favor. And so you just got a bunch of guys with FTP servers to host the movie and make mirrors of it. And yeah, so it was very, very old school internet. Oh. Nowadays, you just, you know, press a button and upload it. And so very different.
How did you know? I mean, how old were you at this time? Sounds like maybe 17, 18. And how did you know to do all this stuff? And even how did you know that that would matter? Like today, you know, it's hard. It's hard for me to convince business owners at times that they should be publishing on YouTube and creating podcasts. And that's in a world that's inundated with it, much less in those early days when it wasn't everywhere around. How did you know that that was a good idea to do?
Yeah, I guess for me, I just was operating out of the innate desire to, you know, I thought I made something really cool. And I've watched, I made a, you know, my highlight reel, my content, I was kind of following in the footsteps of other, you know, pro gamers and celebrity gamers before me. So I was like, I want people to watch my content too. I think I look just as cool and made content that looked just as awesome. So it came out of this drive or desire to be like, I want people to see me, to be seen, and, you know, kind of to prove that I was just as good as everyone else. That was really the impetus for making the content in the first place. And that's what really drove me to do it. How I learned to do that, the hard way, friends. I mean, I was lucky. I definitely had people in my immediate circle from high school and people that I met online that were just very patient and took the time to kind of teach me how to get onto IRC, you know, how to edit video, how to upload video, how to share content, you know, but most of the work I had to fill in on my own. And I wish it was as easy as it is today to create and share content. I mean, if you don't do that, then, you know, no one's going to know about you or what you do.
Right. I think that's amazing that you kind of had that desire. And I think in some ways it's almost destiny, because now you're able to, you know, now years down the road, you're helping other people to be able to do some of the same things, but easier to get exposure. When did this start making money for you? And kind of tied to that, when did you start looking at this as a potential job or career path? I'm also curious, did your parents agree to that? Did the adults in your life look at you and be like, yeah, for sure, just be a professional gamer?
It took a little convincing. When I was growing up, I think my parents were, they liked that I was passionate about something. I think they could recognize that. They could recognize that I was enjoying myself, you know, and I think they kind of just pushed me in the direction that appeared to make me the happiest. And I really did enjoy gaming and competing and making content. And, you know, it was life changing for me, because as like a kid, you know, I didn't really think much of myself. I didn't really think I could do much of anything or be great at it. I kind of just was like any other kid. I'm like, who am I? Right. It taught me that, no, if you work hard and you know, you go out of your way to, like, you know, put yourself out there and do something uncomfortable, it could pay off big time. And you could actually kind of stand out in the crowd and be great at something that other people are competing with you to be great at. So it really taught me that valuable lesson of, you know, it's okay to put yourself out there and, you know, find something you're good at. And then when you find that, like, lean into that, right? Lean into those tailwinds and make the most of it. So my parents came around. I think at first they were a little, you know, concerned. I was young. They were like, you're going to meet strangers for a video game tournament? Like, this sounds sketchy. But after a while, like, they would, you know, I'd set up at home, I would set my PC up so they could watch me. So I set up this little spectator machine for them, and then they could see me compete, and then they could see pictures and videos afterwards. It started to click for them, like, this was real. I started to come home with you know, paychecks. It was not much, a couple hundred bucks here, a couple hundred bucks there, but they started to see, you know, I could actually make money from it. And then I started to really figure out how else I could do that. I started selling lessons. I started kind of marketing myself to bigger and better teams, to sponsors. And I learned a lot, and I think they saw that and they were supportive, but it, you know, took a little convincing.
Right. Yeah. And tell us a little bit about where your career kind of, like, what was, would you say was kind of the pinnacle or like the peak of your professional gaming career?
Yeah, I think I had a couple of moments to actually go to, like, the biggest tournament in the United States at the time, which is the CPL. And I remember going there with one of my favorite teams, and we had a pretty good run of it. We had a pretty tough seed. So, like, at the tournament, you kind of get like a you know, they rank your teams, and we were like a very low ranked team, and we were against a very high ranked team. And I had a few pretty epic clutch moments against the team that ended up getting, like, second place. So they were, like, the second best team in the world. You know, I definitely wasn't that good. I was, like, I was always playing with and against those guys, but I was not in the utmost upper rungs. That was pretty awesome. That was definitely the pinnacle from, like, a competitive standpoint. I think the most memorable was actually a local tournament that we were just against, like, you know, our mortal enemies, and I managed to win a pretty pivotal round that just changed the whole tournament. We won the whole tournament. I got an MVP prize and the bragging rights, which I think are the probably number one thing everyone wants.
Yeah, I think that's amazing, and it's been amazing to see how over the years the conversation really is shifting around esports. I think so many people, you know, have the conversation of, like, well, why would somebody go on Twitch and watch somebody play a game? And then, you know, you kind of think about it and it's like, well, like, why, you know, it's not that much different than, you know, me watching LeBron James do, you know, make a basket when I could go out and shoot a basket in my front yard. You know, obviously he's much, much better at it than I am, which is part of the allure. And so then seeing people that are better at something than you are when it's something that you're really interested in. And I went to a small private college and they just announced they have an esports team this year and are giving out scholarships and different things. And so it's fun to see how the industry is changing and how everybody else is beginning to talk about it in a more professional way. How did this transition to you wanting to start a company that actually served gamers and get into kind of these earlier moments when you started thinking about All-Star or what would become All-Star? And what was going through your mind when you started thinking through, okay, I kind of want to get back into this space and start a company that serves this space?
Yeah, I guess for me, it was almost like revisiting my dreams to some extent, because when I was like a pro gamer and I was competing, I always wanted to figure out how to monetize the content. And I just couldn't figure it out. I was like, you know, 18, 19 years old. My best idea was maybe we could put these movies on DVDs, sell them in Korea, had a very developed esports market. Yeah. You know, StarCraft players were being let out the back of restaurants at the time because they were that famous. And that country really was many years ahead of the rest of the world in terms of, like, esports being legitimate and fully adopted, but couldn't really crack the code. I didn't really know what I needed back then either to, like, you know, come up with a business idea and translate that into a vision and a mission and a pitch and attract capital and build a team and really execute. And so early on, I kind of realized that, you know, I needed real experience if I wanted to do this, because I was always a creative entrepreneur at heart. You know, I was selling websites and graphic design through high school and college. And, you know, my first website I sold to my graphic design teacher in high school. So I was always, you know, trying to work for myself, and I was always creative in those kind of pursuits. And a lot of my my creative skills came from gaming, because I was trying to, you know, play around with, you know, game engines and make mods of games. I was trying to, you know, create content for gamers and teams, right? Selling logos and websites. And so there were two very kind of closely interwoven, you know, parts of my career. But I realized pretty early on that I needed to really understand the business side. So I spent the next, you know, 10 years or so in the, you know, business world. I was in a marketing and digital agency called Blue Fountain Media for about 5 years, and grow that company. We grew from like 75 to over 200 employees, and eventually they were bought by a public tech company called Pactera. And then I worked for Movable Inc., which is an amazing venture-backed startup, where I was there for many years, met some incredible people, and we grew from, you know, again, same kind of 75 to over 300 employees, on track for 100 million in ARR. I really learned the ins and outs of like scaling and being inside of a fast-growing software business, and the skills of sales, which is so important if you want to start a business. You know, you're either recruiting people, you're convincing investors, you're convincing customers, and you know, just being able to really communicate and get people excited about something. So I really learned a lot of valuable skills, from digital marketing to building products and businesses to scaling within a venture-backed tech company. So I finally felt like I had the skills I needed to go and apply that to my own thing. And I remember I was on a flight. I could not sleep on this flight. It was a very routine business trip for me. I had traveled probably half of my time at Movable on the sales side, probably, you know, it was very regular occurrence. I was on a lot of planes, and my my secret weapon was I could sleep on any flight, and I could just wake up and be fresh for my meeting. Could not sleep on this flight. Something was like keeping me up. And so I just started jotting notes on my phone. I was bored and kind of thinking, all right, you know, if I were to finally, you know, start that company, like, what would that be? Because it's something I've talked about a lot and something I dreamt about a lot. And so I finally started kind of going through my own story and background, and kind of found a problem at the core of that, which was it's just too hard to create and share great content, especially for gamers that aren't creative or technical, that don't have great hardware, and they don't have a lot of free time. And so it really came from like thinking through what is a problem I'm really the right person to solve, and then, you know, kind of building out the solution and the company and the brand from there. Mm-hmm. And then it was just like an unstoppable, you know, it was once the train was on the tracks, that was it. It was just a matter of when is the right time to leave the full-time job to go full-time into the company. You know, when do we need to raise money? When do we need to build the team? And yeah, we're just, you know, it's like one foot after another at this point.
Yeah, that's really interesting about the plane. And, you know, it's always those moments are always interesting of when did the idea come, or when did you get to the place where I call kind of the point of no return, where psychologically, emotionally, you get invested enough in this idea to where you're not going back. I was just talking to a friend today who was kind of in the middle of that. And I kind of told them, I was like, have you made up your, like, you haven't signed the paperwork, but like, have you made up your mind? And they're like, yeah, emotionally I'm like there. I just, like, in the real world, I haven't caught up to that yet, but in my heart, I know I'm not going back.
Well, that's where it
starts. And I think everybody has those moments.
That's where it starts. Yeah. You need to, you have to have that. You have to have made the decision for yourself that, you know, this has to happen and is going to happen. And it's just a matter of what steps in what order. And until then, it's all talk. And I, you know, if there's one thing I learned over my career is that, you know, I value action more than anything else. And so I apply that to myself and was like, all right, well, what do I need to do? And I started coming up with designs and building out pitches and doing market research, and then trying to convince the smartest people I knew that I had a good idea and that I was the right guy to execute it. And then, you know, once I had most of the people in my life on board, from my fiance to my, you know, boss to, you know, my friends to my former colleagues, I was like, okay, I feel confident that at this point I've sold this idea to so many people, I have to do it. But I also felt genuinely like I beat it up enough and I had everything I needed. And now it's a question of finding a lawyer and filing the paperwork and going out, talking to the investors, finding the team, building the product. But that psychological point of no return was, I felt like I took those notes from like that flight, and I just started to refine that and pitch that and talk to enough people about it. And then it became, you know, that was the first thing they asked me about the next time I saw them, was like, how's it going with, you know, All-Star? Like, have you made progress? You know, what's the next step? And people, I almost felt like it became inevitable at that point.
Yeah. Where's the product at today? Like, describe the product, and like, when you kind of like pitch it and describe it to people, where's it at today, and how can people interact with the product?
Totally. Yeah. So we are a live product. We've been in beta with actual users since the end of Q1 of last year. We really went wide with the release summer of last year, and we went from like dozens of users creating hundreds of clips to tens of thousands of users making hundreds of thousands of clips, and it's really amazing, and that's been in the span of a year. So right now there's a live desktop app. You go to AllStarGG, sign up, download the app. It is integrated with Counter-Strike, Dota 2. You can create content from within the game very easily. The whole idea of All-Star is we take the creation process and we make it really accessible, because it's really inaccessible. You know, most content creators are streamers, and there aren't that many. There's something like 6 to 10 million gaming creators that fuel a $6.5 billion industry. And if you look at how many people could be creating content, I mean, they're watched by over 1 billion gamers, soon to be 2 billion in the next couple of years. And outside of gaming, you know, platforms like Instagram have 1 billion users creating 500 million stories every day. Within gaming, Twitch is 150 million users. You've got maybe 4 or 5 million streamers. So it's less than 3%. So most gamers don't really create content. So what we tried to do is make it as fun and easy as playing the games themselves to create and share really great content. So you can just, you know, play a game, type exclamation All-Star in the game's chat after you did something awesome, and then that's it. We go and create the content for you in the cloud. It's automatically trimmed and tagged and titled and uploaded. It's posted and shared to your social media, to our web platform, and that's just the beginning of it. That's just kind of square one. And we've already started to build out the next version of All-Star, which includes kind of creative automation tools, where now you can create content that looks like a cinematic movie trailer of your gaming moment, but it didn't take you any extra effort. It was just part of that experience of typing All-Star after you did something awesome, and really integrated into that gameplay.
Right. And so many people don't get into content creation because of the time involved, or it's something around the time, usually, whether it's the actual physical time, how many hours it's going to take to create a video, or the time of learning how to do that, you know, learning how to use a video editing software and all of that stuff. So it's amazing that you've kind of removed that primary barrier to make it easy, to where now really the question is, it's more of why not instead of why. I know that, you know, creator empowerment, creator ownership, creators being able to kind of be in more control of what they're creating from their brand and making it easier for them to create more from their brand that they can own and monetize is really important to you. Why is that a problem in the industry, and why is that something that you want to make more accessible for creators?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think, you know, first and foremost, the time involved, in making content's work. Fundamentally, creating content is work. It's hard work. And for most people, it's very low on their priority list, because, you know, especially for gamers, right, they're playing games because they want to have fun. So, you know, creating content's hard work. You're already at odds with the motivation of the user in the first place. So we're trying to kind of bridge that gap, make it just as fun to play a game as it is to create content and vice versa, and really lower the bar for entry. So once it becomes, you know, that accessible, the idea is that our focus is the everyday gamer. So we're trying to kind of flip the pyramid. And that's really important for me because I came from that. You know, I was just a regular, average, everyday gamer. And I was really lucky in my ability to create and share and market myself through content. And that's not available for most gamers. And in some cases, it's harder than it's ever been. You know, there's more friction that faces these gaming creators today, really, than ever before, which is hard to believe. But to me, there's, you know, one thing is that that's just a huge missed opportunity from a business standpoint. You know, there's just a massive market to capture in the, you know, untapped new gaming creators. So, you know, we're absolutely super focused on that. But from a motivational standpoint, you know, I think democratization is a big theme in today's day and age. You know, almost we look at every industry and go, well, how can this be more democratized? And surprisingly enough, gaming content, which is very grassroots, you know, esports, which is very grassroots, community driven, there just isn't a lot of that. The everyday gamer is not catered to for creation, for consumption, sure. But, you know, their ability to share content with friends is very overlooked. There's a lot of friction. And personally, I feel like we're missing out, right? We're missing the next great big gaming star, the next great professional gaming creator. And the average everyday gamer is missing out on the experience that I had, which was, you know, gaining the confidence, you know, gaining the, you know, sort of sense of accomplishment and really the gratitude and, you know, gratification that comes from making something artistic and creative and enjoying other people's enjoyment of that. And I think that's a really important and rewarding experience that should be accessible to all people, gamers especially. And it's very out of reach for gamers. You know, there's no, you can't take the smartphone out of your pocket while you're playing, you know, Fortnite and go and throw that up on TikTok. You know, there's a lot of steps involved to creating short, snackable content and sharing that with your friends. And that just doesn't exist anywhere. Mm-hmm. And anyone can sit down and take a picture of their, you know, lunch with their smartphone and post it on Instagram. But within gaming, it would be like, you know, if taking that picture made your food taste bad and look worse. That's basically the state of creating short form content and sharing that in gaming. So that's what we're trying to fix.
And I like that you're talking about the everyday gamer, because so many people are hesitant to get into creating content as their potential career because they don't want to spend the time if they are, you know, they're like, I'm not going to be a professional. And some people don't even want to. They're like, that. I love doing this every day. And it sounds like you're an advocate for even everyday gamers getting into creating content. Why do you think it's important for everyday gamers that just enjoy it? They don't have career aspirations in gaming. They, you know, sure, nobody's going to really say no to earning money off of things, but they're not trying to, you know, become monetized and earn a ton of money. Why is creating content still important for gamers like that?
Yeah, I think a few things. I think one, I think it's just a valuable exercise. I think you're, you know, the idea of creating something is very different than playing something and consuming something. And so, you know, however accessible you can make creation, I think there's innate value in what a person gains from that and the ability to say, hey, I made that. That was me playing. I made those creative editing decisions and I shared that and people liked it. And I think there's value in that, more value in that than not for the individual themselves. I think taking a step further, you know, I don't think everyone necessarily wants to or needs to create content and then make money. I think there's plenty of people that could be doing that that can't. And I think, you know, lowering that bar, making that more accessible is going to be great for them, great for us, great for everybody. But I do think that there's other aspects of just, you know, wanting to advance in your pro gaming career. You know, if you're playing, you know, games all day long and you're great at that game, and you want to go somewhere, you want to get on a top team, you want to get recruited, you want to, you know, build up your own reputation, no one's going to know about you unless you market yourself. And you have to market yourself through content because there's really no other way. And so that's one of the main, you know, use cases that maybe you're not looking to make money off of that content, but, you know, you want to advance in your professional gaming career, just getting to that next level where maybe at the end of that, you know, you make it, you know, you break through, you go pro. That's where the money is. The content's kind of a stepping stool to help you get there. But I think those are some of the aspects of it outside of obviously the, you know, opportunity in kind of, you know, capitalizing right on that market. I do feel like for the individual, there's a lot of value there that they just can't really get at today.
Right. Yeah. And I know you still have a lot. You still have a lot that you want to roll out with the product, but I know you're wanting to make it easier for people to make money from their clips and from their games. Talk to me about the monetization side and what are you guys doing to help more people to be able to make money from their content as opposed to all of the money in esports kind of funneling towards, you know, the top 1%.
Totally. Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of hurdles in just trying to make money off of gaming content. For one, half of the content we consume is audio, specifically music. And it's really difficult to create content that is not only synchronized with music, but has music that you can actually like legally utilize. And there's a lot of hurdles that creators face in trying to find good quality content to supplement their gameplay in the form of music that won't get them copyright strikes, that won't lead to legal troubles or, you know, demonetization. So we actually partnered with Alibi Music, who essentially solves this problem by creating a service for a huge volume of really Hollywood quality music and sound, and then providing kind of programmatic access. So we're able to create a bridge between, you know, the gamers' gameplay and the video content they produce, and then enhancing that with really high quality, high production value music that is completely on the level in terms of the rights management side. So they can go and they can monetize that content on YouTube as long as they've whitelisted their account with us, and they can upload and share that anywhere. And so it makes it a lot easier for a creator to, you know, simply just make good content that doesn't get them in trouble. But the other side of this is, you know, our model is very focused on the creator sharing content with their friends, and then that, you know, everyone's friends end up becoming part of All-Star's audience. And when you start to think about strength in numbers and network effects, you know, the audience becomes massive. And so you have this opportunity now to kind of streamline access to that audience and provide tools for creators to monetize themselves with this access to audience. So the ability to, you know, create, you know, sort of inoffensive and let's call it authentic and valuable ad units where you're actually providing products and services that gamers are interested in. But you're not just doing that for All-Star to make money. The creators can start to share some of that revenue themselves, right? That's one of the obvious sort of down the roads. But, you know, on the flip side of it, you know, we're more focused on providing value-added tools for creators. So allowing them to create and share better content, to, you know, provide them with efficiencies that aren't available otherwise, and providing that in an affordable service. So subscriptions, we're getting ready to launch a sort of test of our small subscription offering, which will allow All-Star content creators to get access to more professional tools and technologies that we've developed for them, so that they can make even better content more quickly, and even using the content they produce with us to promote their own other channels, right? YouTube and Twitch. And, you know, that's what's great about snackable content. It's an awesome way to keep an audience engaged and bringing them to your other channels, because it's really hard to keep people engaged these days. So we make it really easy to, you know, constantly crank out small bite-sized content to drive those people elsewhere. That's just a little bit about our monetization. I can't get into too much detail, but we're taking a very interesting approach. And I will say our one of our kind of core tenets is, you know, we want to build a profitable company in an authentic way. We are gamers ourselves. We do not like business models that can come across as deceptive or predatory, and we're not looking to go and, you know, sell people's data or do anything kind of sketchy. You know, we're looking to create way more value than we capture, and we already see that today. We have users that ask to pay for the product on like a daily basis. They're like, this is too good to be true. This shouldn't be free, which is awesome. We love hearing that. You know, that's nice. But, you know, it's just that's part of our strategy here is we're really trying to create something that has so much value that, you know, we're only charging for ways to enhance that base value. We're not really looking to, you know, go about it the wrong way, I think.
That access is huge, and access to tools and resources for creators. And I think over the last 10, 20 years as technology has just gone nuts. That's been, I think, one of the reasons that, you know, just more people are making more money. There's more opportunities because there's less friction involved. Like, there's way more access to tools. People can, you know, everything you had to learn on your own or learn from your friends and finding people with FTPs and all of this friction between you having an idea for a video and you getting that video out, you know, that's probably, you know, that friction's probably decreased probably, you know, 90%, if not 99%, as far as just how much easier it is for people to be able to do that. And I think it's amazing that what you're doing is really taking something that you learned to do. You saw the value of marketing yourself, getting clips out there, and the opportunities that showed you. And then now you're kind of giving that to others. I imagine you've mentioned investors, you've mentioned kind of a team around you. I imagine that you have a lot of people that are aligning with this vision because it's an exciting vision. Tell me about, you know, you guys just went through a funding round. What is kind of the next, like, let's say like 18 months or so, like, what's kind of the future look like for All-Star? What are you excited about that's kind of going on in your ranks right now?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we've raised right now about $4.2 million, give or take a little more, in venture capital. One of our first investors was Mark Cuban. Our most recent seed round was led by the New York Angels. We had, you know, an amazing amount of investor participation from some of the top angel groups in the U.S. to, you know, leading VCs like Studio VC, J Ventures, Emerging Ventures. And so we've got some really fantastic investors that are helping us, and we're very grateful for their support. And when I think about like the future for us, you know, I think it's funny when you talk about some of like the friction kind of being removed, because even just like starting our company, growing our company, things that would take like months of like planning and hiring and, you know, just figuring out like systems and processes. Now there's subscription services, you know, managing, you know, your payroll system, managing your human resources, taking user feedback and allowing them to vote that up and down, and, you know, being able to provide a consistent design system for an engineer and your creative team, and having one single version of all of that. It's like, it's incredible how much things have sped up, even just on our side. So, you know, it's really cool. And I do think it is a testament to, you know, more startups like All-Star being possible and us, you know, kind of paying that forward a little bit. And the things that have us most excited are, you know, new games. So we're gearing up for League of Legends. And then we're really hopeful to get access to the Valorant replay system. You know, they have not given out any concrete information on timing, but that is definitely on the roadmap for Riot Games, and it's our most requested title. So getting into new games like League of Legends and Valorant are very exciting to our team. We're also working on other games like Fortnite and Rainbow Six. And then there's some conversations going on with other publishers and game engines that I can't really elaborate on. But it's very exciting. It's very validating that, you know, more than just our investors, more than just our team are excited about this idea of building the infrastructure for an everyday average gamer to create and share truly professional content. And so I think that's a big part of our vision, is that level playing field. And I think we're in the very early stages of this, but, you know, gaming content's not going away. You know, the demographics for sports keep aging up, and you know, the majority of the young generations are consuming streaming and digital content on demand and short form. And so, you know, we're very excited about that and really bringing together, you know, the viewer and the creator. And I think this is what TikTok has done a masterful job of, is that it's one audience. A viewer is just a creator that hasn't created yet. So the more that you can bring this audience together, and that's what we're trying to do, is to look at the gaming content audience, those that consume it, the billion plus gamers that watch that on a daily basis. How do we turn them into the creator? And it's really just two sides of the same coin, and accessibility is kind of the key. So new games definitely have us very excited, and just growth, and, you know, going from, you know, thousands to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of users, and millions upon millions of views, you know, in a month, and getting those down to a day, and watching the metrics is it's its own roller coaster. It's an interesting, you know, it's hard to relate to the numbers. They keep getting bigger and bigger. And, you know, we recently had like a town hall slide of just, you know, saying, okay, we've got this many weekly active users. This is how big of a stadium that could fill. When you actually see all the people there, it's like, whoa, like this, there's a lot of people that we're touching with this, with what was just an idea barely a year ago, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And it sounds like you've, you know, you had this idea, you started building it, and for the last year you've been testing it on kind of your starting games, and that test has gone really well, and it's going to be exciting to see kind of the expansion as you start adding new games and new users over the next year. So, Nick, this has been wonderful. Again, I love diving into worlds that most people don't, they're not thinking about on the everyday thing. And similarly, as people's ideas of esports and gaming and all this stuff has shifted, I think now the people in the business community are beginning to realize, like, oh, there's real business opportunities, and not just that it's something to, you know, predatorily kind of prey upon for money from the industry. People are realizing, like, there's real people that have real stories, like you, that are in this industry, and there's a lot of creators that want tools. So I love what you've done. I love what you've built, and it's going to be exciting to see what happens over the next year. Nick, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want? And also just kind of for All-Star, if people are listening or they know other gamers and they're like, man, we got to get on here. What's the best next step?
Awesome. Thank you, Seth. I love talking about All-Star and gaming, so I appreciate you having me on. I think, listen, there's a huge movement. We're right at the cusp, and we're so excited to see what the future has in store. So you can find me and us. I'm at Nick Cuomo on Twitter. We are at PlayShareStar across all social media. And, of course, hop on over to allstar.gg, and that will bring you to our product and platform. You can sign up and start creating with us.
Awesome. And it's free. There's no cost to be creating, which is amazing. So, Nick, thank you so much again for your time. We really appreciate it. And best of luck as you guys grow like crazy in this next year.
Awesome. Thank you, Seth. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.